Hello, everyone. I really am excited to conclude the sex stuff for about a month, and I really mean it this time. So let's talk about it. And this is how I want to start. I want to start by talking about the importance of having a wholesome, healthy relationship with sex. That also means no one is supposed to have an unwholesome, toxic relationship with sex. So we need to be holistic about our sexuality instead of being catastrophic about our sexuality. So this is from January Nelson, thoughtcatalog.com. She is a writer, editor, dreamer. She writes about astrology, games, love, places, and entertainment. January graduate in English and Literature degree from Columbia University. But I'm going to put it into my own words to some extent to make it more personal to me. I'm learning how to do that when I do articles. I'm learning put as much personal viewpoints for myself as much as possible, so it's not completely other people's thoughts, but you get all the truth from me that you need. So, seven types of sex you only have in toxic relationships. So, number one, sex when you're not in the mood. In a healthy relationship, or should I say healthy relationships too, because you can have healthy sex relationships that are casual as well as committed. You should be completely comfortable saying no to your person and or persons. Now, when you say no, speak the truth in love. You can do that romantically if you're committed, and if you're casual, do it compassionately. Don't get me wrong, you should be compassionately loving whether you're casual or committed in terms of sex and sexual partnership and or partnerships, right? All right. And of course, your person and or person should understand or understand what the word no means. You've heard this saying before, no is a complete sentence. They shouldn't try to pressure you to change your mind. They shouldn't guilt trip you about how much they've done for you lately as if you owe them your body. They shouldn't compare you to an ex-partner, casual or committed, who used to sleep with them multiple times per day. They shouldn't make you feel sad or mad about your decision. They should simply accept it. In other words, coercion is dangerous, it's unlawful, and it's immoral. No one should argue with you on what your healthy boundaries are and are not, and that includes sex and sexuality. Number two, sex when you don't even come close to coming. In a healthy relationship and or healthy relationships, casual or committed, you should communicate with each other directly, but respectfully. You should put maximum effort into each other from the standpoint of sincerity. You should spoil each other. What does spoil mean? That means reward each other from time to time. Those pleasant surprises from time to time. And that can happen whether you're casual or committed. Just because you give somebody like a gift card, or you know, you pay for somebody's movie ticket, for some people that's a part of their committed relationships, and for other people, for some, that's a part of their casual relationships. So you can have appropriate acts of kindness regardless of the dynamics between you, all parties involved. That means also, if your person or persons are the only one who ever orgasms or climaxes, something is severely wrong. You deserve ethical pleasure as much as they do. You deserve oral sex as much as they do. You deserve anal sex as much as they do. You deserve vaginal sex as much as they do. You deserve all the sexual positions and all the sexual acts and all of the sexual moves as much as they do. You shouldn't be sacrificing your own enjoyment in order to make them happy. Sex is supposed to be fun for all parties involved, not only for just them. Now, when I say healthy relationships, I understand that I am inclusive with group sex because group sex does belong in sex conversations. So I'm talking to the monogamous and the non-monogamous as well. Okay, number three, sex when you're hurting. If you experience legitimate pain down there, you should ask your person and or persons to stop right away, immediately, and instantly. Don't force yourself to continue. Don't worry about disappointing them. Don't feel sad or mad about leaving them with blue balls. You can fulfill their legitimate needs and reasonable desires in other ways, or they can take care of themselves. They've done it before and they can absolutely do it again. If you're with the right person and or the right persons, they would never want to hurt you unnecessarily anyway. They would rather stop than cause you needless pain. Number four, sex when you're body shamed. Your person and or person should only have positive things to say about your body. If they comment on how much weight you've gained or how small your body parts are, then they don't deserve to see you fully naked for a second longer. Your body is intrinsically beautiful. Anyone who says otherwise doesn't deserve your time and most certainly doesn't deserve to sleep with you. Keep your quality standards high. Even if you haven't learned to love your body yet, which will take trained professional help, as well as self-positive affirmations and all the other therapeutic techniques, that doesn't mean you should let others disrespect your body. No one's bodies should be disrespected. You don't disrespect their body, they don't disrespect your body. Number five, sex where you feel physically unsafe. If you want your person and or persons to use any and or all the birth control methods, they should be using birth controlled sex methods and have birth controlled sex. That's what everybody, you know, that's what the arrangement is. Hey, we protect ourselves sexually. No excuses, no whining, no bargaining. Safe sex and or safer sex, only sex you should be having if you are non-committed. I know that's, for a lot of people, that's how it is. For some non-monogamous relationships, they trust each other, so it's unprotected, but that's because they don't do that with everybody, of course, but they may do that with a select small amount, and that works for them, and that doesn't cause them any problems. For some of them, they can do that, have no unwanted pregnancies, and, you know, no diseases or infections. So for people who are able to do that, I live and let live on that. With a lot of people, they feel like, hey, safe sex is what we do. Because you do have some monogamous couples, some married, some unmarried, who use birth control when they have sex. So just because it's committed, that doesn't mean that they don't protect themselves. And let me expand the definition of physical and safe. A lot of people think about condoms, for example, or dental dams, for example, DAMs. But it's deeper. It's very deep. When you have sex with somebody and everyone's naked, right? Or even, and even before that, you shouldn't have sex with someone or people that are dangerous people. For example, you have to ask yourself, is the person or people that you with, do they have personality disorders that they have not gotten help for? Because you don't want someone to have violent outbursts in the middle of sex and they never got any type of professional help for that. So when it comes to sex, you don't want somebody to all of a sudden they're erratically beating up on you or erratically cussing you out, erratically yelling at you, or erratically just being the type of people that you feel like you need to get away from them as soon as possible. That means walking away, running away, or, you know, getting a wheelchair and just trying to wheel yourself out, no disrespect, but you know, some people on wheelchairs, it's the truth. And you don't feel the need to call 911 because they're having these uncontrollable episodes, right? You don't want to have sex with someone who puts your life in danger, where the way they grab you, or the way they look at you, or their facial expressions towards you, or the tone of voice, and the word choices, and how they talk about you, or how they talk to you, that those are all forms of physical unsafety, and all forms of all-around unsafety, when you think about that too. So when you give somebody your body, no matter what they say or do to you sexually, make sure that everyone is safe and protected. Like, you know, the way I touch you or feel you, or the way I speak to you or say sexy things to you, you should be safe and protected all the time, everywhere y'all choose to have sex. There is no room for danger of any kind whatsoever. Then, number six. Sex where you feel emotionally unsafe. Your person and or person should respect your turn offs and turn ons in the bedrooms and all the other sexual settings where y'all choose to have sex. If you tell them you don't want them to do certain sexual positions, do certain sexual acts, or do certain sexual moves on you, they should actively and compassionately listen to you. You should never feel unsafe with them. You should never feel threatened by their verbal actions and nonverbal actions inside or outside of the bedrooms and all the other sexual settings where y'all choose to have sex. And number seven, sex where you're counting down the minutes until it ends. If you don't want to be having sex, you shouldn't be having sex. The right person and or the right people aren't going to leave you because you weren't in the mood for that day, that night, that noonday, that early in the morning, and that morning. If you're using sex to keep someone and some people around, then let them go. They're staying for the wrong reasons. Hold out for someone, or the right people, who likes you more than your body. Someone who is happy, glad-hearted, joyful, euphoric, and excited to spend time with you, even when sex isn't involved. And so, these are all the types of sex that I avoid having. These are so important for people to definitely consider. And I want to share more in depth about what I'm saying, because there's more intimacy that needs to be explored. So when it comes to myself and my partners, I'm going to be very clear. We honor each other's physical boundaries. What does that mean? This is mindbodygreen.com, but I'm putting my own words to it as well. Physical boundaries includes your needs for personal space, your comfort with touch, and your physical needs like needing to rest, eat food, and drink water. It is okay to let people know that you don't want to be touched or that you need more space. It is also okay to say that you are hungry or that you need to rest. So those are the things that we honor each other's physical boundaries. So it is okay to let people know that you don't want to be touched, that you need more space. It's also okay to say that you're hungry, that you need to rest. Healthy physical boundaries might sound like, I'm really tired, I need to sit down now. I'm not a big hugger, I'm a handshake person. I need to eat, I'm gonna go grab something. I'm allergic to, insert here, so we can't have that in our home. No, I don't want you to touch me like that. Don't go into my room without asking first, so. My partners and myself, we honor each other's physical boundaries. Here's what we absolutely avoid. Physical boundary violations feel like receiving inappropriate unwanted touch, being denied your physical needs, told to keep walking when you are tired, that you need to wait to eat or drink while sitting down somewhere, or having someone come to your personal space in a way that is uncomfortable entering your room without permission, for example. This can vary on a spectrum from mild to severe. The most severe violations result in serious physical abuse and neglect. So my partners and myself, we avoid all of those catastrophes. Number two, emotional boundaries. Emotional boundaries are all about respecting and honoring feelings and energy. Setting emotional boundaries means recognizing how much emotional energy you are capable of taking in, knowing when to share and when not to share, and limiting emotional sharing with people who respond very poorly, exceedingly poorly. Respecting emotional boundaries means validating the feelings of others and making sure you respect their ability to take in emotional information. So, my partners and I, we do all of the above. Examples. It might sound like when I share my feelings, we can get criticized. It makes me totally shut down. I can only share with you, babe, or respond respectfully to me. I'm so sorry you're having such a tough time. Right now, I'm not in a place to take in all of this information. Do you think we can come back to this conversation later? I'm having a hard time and really need to talk. Are you in a place to listen right now? I really can't talk about that right now. It isn't the right time. So my partners and I, we make sure to be direct and with respect with one another. So here are all the things my partners and I absolutely avoid. Emotional boundary violations include dismissing, criticizing feelings, asking questions that are not appropriate for the relationship. We do avoid inappropriate questions, inappropriate comments, inappropriate compliments, inappropriate statements, inappropriate remarks, inappropriate observations as well. reading or going through personal and emotional information, we don't do that. Asking people to justify their feelings, we don't do that. And again, dismissing, criticizing feelings, we don't do that. Assuming we know how other people feel, we don't do that. Telling other people how they feel, we don't do that. Emotional dumping on people without their permission, we don't do that. Sharing inappropriate emotional information with children, we don't ever do that. So my partners and I, we honor each other's time boundaries. Your time is valuable, and it is important to protect how it is utilized. Setting time boundaries is incredibly important at work, home, and socially, and all the other areas of life. Setting time boundaries means understanding your priorities and setting aside enough time for the many areas of your life without overcommitting. When you understand your priorities, it's much easier to limit the amount of time you're giving to other people. So my partner's not, we honor all of the above. Healthy time boundaries as examples might sound like, I can't come to that event this week and I can only stay for an hour. If you have time to chat today, I would love to help, but I would be overcommitting myself. Is there another time? We have family time on Sunday, so we won't make it. I am happy to help with that. My hourly rate is... So, my partners and I, we respect all that very well. Here are all the things that my partners and I absolutely avoid when it comes to time boundaries. Violating time boundaries is like asking professionals for their time without paying them, demanding time from people, keeping people in conversations on task for longer than we told them we would, showing up late or canceling on people because we've overcommitted, and contacting people and said they'll be unavailable. Another thing I want to talk about is sometimes we talk to people longer than we're supposed to. Let's say a person can have medical conditions, or they may have other types of conditions that may be non-medical. And if it's obvious that talking for quite some time can result in either physical issues or, you know, emotionally they may feel drained because of their conditions, then we have to limit our time talking to people. These are things I'm still instilling in my soul. So my partners and I, we don't do any of those violent time boundaries at all. Number four, my partners and I, we honor each other's sexual boundaries. It's mandatory for us. Healthy sexual boundaries include enthusiastic consent, enthusiastic agreement, enthusiastic respect, enthusiastic understanding of preferences and desires, and enthusiastic privacy, and enthusiastic preferences, enthusiastic desires, and enthusiastic needs. Healthy sexual boundaries include enthusiastically asking for enthusiastic consent, enthusiastically discussing, enthusiastically asking for what pleases you, enthusiastically requesting birth control usage of any kind if you want it, enthusiastically discussing contraception, enthusiastically saying no to things that you do not like or that hurt you, enthusiastically protecting the privacy of the person and her people. And even if you talk about these things, you're not going to always be enthusiastic when you talk about these things. You may have to have hard conversations, hard truths, and hard decisions regarding sex because, you know, human beings have sexual hurt, sexual habits, and sexual hangups. And as long as those things are resolved or being resolved, then having a healthy sex life should be suitable in ACT, APT. APT means appropriate or suitable in the circumstances, and make sure the circumstances are appropriate and suitable in and of themselves. Okay, so My partner and I would get all that. And here are the examples. This might sound like, do you want to have sex right now? Is this comfortable for you? Is this comfortable for you? Tell me what you like. Tell me what you don't like. I don't like that. Let's try something different. I don't want to have sex today or tonight. You can come instead. I'm really into insert desire or need here. Is that something you would feel comfortable with? And the parts that we've mastered that. There's no such thing as sexual boundary violation when it comes to myself and my partners. For example, we never do sulking, punishing, or getting angry if someone does not want to have sex, not asking for consent, pressure to engage in unwanted sexual acts, unwanted sexual comments, leering, lying about contraceptive use, lying about your health history, criticizing another person's sexual preferences, unwanted touch, assault, and rape. What does leering mean? Leering means looking or gazing in unpleasant ways. We never do that. Okay, number five, my partners and I honor each other's intellectual boundaries. Intellectual boundaries refer to your thoughts, ideas, and curiosity. Healthy intellectual boundaries include respect that is for other people, and they can be violated when your thoughts and curiosity are shut down, dismissed, or belittled. Respectfulness and willingness to dialogue, understand, or understand are important here. Healthy intellectual boundaries also mean considering whether or not it's a good time to talk about something. And my partners and I, we treasure these things. We never shut down, dismiss, nor belittle each other. They might sound like as intellectual boundaries, some examples. I know we disagree, but I won't let you belittle me like that. I would love to talk about this more. I don't think talking about it during Thanksgiving dinner is the best time. When we talk about this, we don't get very far. I think it's a good idea to avoid the conversation right now. I can respect that we have different opinions. Does this mean that you need to be accepting all thoughts and opinions? Absolutely not. It's also important to learn to recognize the difference between healthy and unhealthy discourse. If someone is sharing an opinion that's inherently harmful, for example, racism, sexism, xenophobia, queerphobia, homophobia, etc., then you have every right to put a hard line in the sand. You can set the boundary in your own way. It might sound like letting the person and or people know you do not tolerate that kind of talk, distancing yourself from them, or cutting off even completely. You do not have to have quote unquote intellectual discourse with someone who is violating you and or other people. So, my partners and I are only accepting of all wholesome thoughts and wholesome opinions. We're never accepting of bigoted thoughts and bigoted. What healthy boundaries look like? Because boundaries are what happen when you consent yourself and what you need and want and access your voice to speak to those things. We all have quote unquote limits, we all experience violations of our limits. Most of the time, people are not trying to violate your limits, they just aren't aware of what they are. Sometimes it's because we're not clear with ourselves or other people about what we want or need. Here are six boundaries you deserve to have and what they might look like in practice. Because so few of us understand or understand what boundaries actually are, we rarely see evidence of them working. But when they do, you feel it as wonders for mental and relational health. Many people have the wrong idea about boundaries. They believe that they already have good boundaries, and in reality, they have brick walls. They believe that boundaries are quote unquote unkind. Healthy boundaries are the ultimate guide to successful relationships. Without healthy boundaries, relationships do not thrive. They result in feelings of resentment, disappointment, or violation. These feelings unchecked can lead to being cut off from others or enmeshment. When there's no clear division between you and others' needs and feelings, these situations are ideal. This is by Elizabeth Earnshaw, LMFT, July 2019, licensed marriage and family therapist, six types of boundaries you deserve to have, how to maintain. So So these are all the boundaries my partners and I never violate and always do right by. Number six, my partners and I honor each other's material boundaries. Material boundaries refer to items and possessions like your home, car, clothing, jewelry, furniture, money, etc., or just any vehicle, even if it's not a car. It is healthy to understand what you can and cannot share and how you expect your items and materials to be treated by the people you share them with. Having limits on how your material items are treated is healthy, prevents resentment over time. This might sound like I can't lend out my car or vehicle. I'm the only person on the insurance. We can't give any more money. We would be happy to help you in another way. Sure, I'm happy to share my dress with you. Just a heads up, I do need it back by Friday. Material boundaries are violated when your things are destroyed or stolen or when they are, quote unquote, borrowed too frequently. Another material violation is the use of materials, money, possessions to manipulate and control relationships. The more we set boundaries, the more we recognize them. Setting boundaries, we help people show up for us, and we also become better at showing up for them. Whereas if Brene Brown, clear as kind. For my partners, we never violate each other's material boundaries. My partners and I, we never violate each other's non-negotiable boundaries. Non-negotiable boundaries are deal breakers, things that you absolutely must have in order to feel safe and be safe and stay safe. They usually pertain to safety issues such as physical violence, emotional abuse, reckless drug or alcohol usage, non-stop infidelity as an example, and life-threatening health issues. We all need some non-negotiable boundaries, but we also need to be careful that we don't put too many of our boundaries in this category. If a non-negotiable boundary is going to have any meaning, you have to be willing to follow through on it. It's counterproductive to set non-negotiable boundaries that you don't enforce. After reading about the seven types of boundaries, I'll be gaining clarity about the boundaries you need to set. I encourage you to write them down so that you can hold yourself accountable for creating boundaries to protect yourself and to establish your individuality. Ensure that you use your time, energy, resources for what matters most to you. The examples could be, Mom, if you don't instill a fence around your pool, my children will not be able to come to your house. Infidelity is a deal breaker for me. I will not continue this relationship if you cheat on me. Right? My partner's not in honor. We're sensitive to fidelity. We're sensitive to fidelity for sure. And my partners and I, once again, never violate each other's non-negotiable boundaries. My partners and I, we don't violate each other's emotional and mental boundaries. Emotional and mental boundaries protect your right to have your own feelings and thoughts, to not have your feelings criticized and validated, and not have to take care of other people's feelings. Emotional boundaries differentiate your feelings from other people, so you're accountable for your own feelings, but not responsible for how others feel. Emotional boundaries also allow us to create emotional safety by respecting each other's feelings, not oversharing personal information that's inappropriate for the nature or level of closeness in the relationship. Examples: I don't feel comfortable discussing this. I feel embarrassed and powerless when you chastise me in front of children. I'd like you to stop. And adults too. You could say, hey, I feel embarrassed and powerless when you chastise in front of adults. I'd like you to stop. So emotional and mental boundaries are important for myself and my partners. There's more about sexual boundaries that I want to put more meat to it. My partners and I honor each other's sexual boundaries in all these ways too. Sexual boundaries protect your right to consent to ask what you like sexually and to honesty about your partner's sexual history. The type of information you need to know, not the type of information you don't need to know, right? They define what kind of sexual touch and intimacy you want, how often, when, where, and with whom. Examples, I like to be touched like this. They have a policy of not having sex on the first date, or some have a personal policy of having sex on the first date. Hey, everybody's live and let live on that. Every partner's different. And dates can be committed, and dates can be casual. Just keep that in mind. My partners, we honor each other's physical boundaries. Let's put more meat in that. Physical boundaries protect your space and body, your right to not be touched, to have privacy to meet your physical needs, such as resting or eating. They tell others how close they can get to you, what kind of physical touch, if any, is okay, how much privacy you need, and how to behave in your personal space. A physical boundary clearly defines that your body and personal space belong to you. Examples, when someone sits uncomfortably close to you, you move away or say, I need a little more personal space. Or it could be some of my partners may not drink, so we don't keep or consume alcohol at our house. Some partners do that as well. You know, some do drink and consume alcohol in their house. Some keep it at home. Every partner is different. Just keep that in mind. And everyone, you know, I honor my partners as time boundaries. Let's put more meat to that. Time boundaries protect how you spend your time. They protect you from agreeing to do things you don't want to do, having people waste your time being overworked. You know, don't ever waste your own time. Examples. For, you know, my partners who have busy lives just like I do. These are healthy examples. I reserve my evenings for family time. I'll respond to all work emails first thing in the morning. Or, you know, my partners may have diverse relationships with their parents or not have any. It could be, Dad, I don't have time to take you shopping this week. I'll place an order for you with the grocery delivering service. Okay? Part of busy lives for some of my partners may include making sure their parents are okay if they get along with them. And my partners and I, we honor each other's financial and material boundaries. Financial material boundaries protect your financial resources and possessions, your right to spend your money as you choose, to not give or loan your money or possessions if you don't want to, and your right to be paid by an employer as agreed. Examples could be, I'm on a budget, so I brought my lunch from home and won't be ordering lunch today. Please don't borrow my car or vehicle without asking. Number four, we honor each other's spiritual religious boundaries. Some of my partners, you know, they may be theists, and some of my partners may be agnostic, some of my partners may be non-theists, even atheists. I'm just saying, every partner is different. Spiritual and religious boundaries protect your right to believe in or not believe in what you want, worship as you wish or not worship at all, and to practice spiritual religious beliefs or to not have religion, or to not have theistic spirituality, so to speak. Examples, you know, it could be, I'm gonna make up these examples because I think, you know, it's important for me to make up my own examples. You know, hey, some partners may not go to houses of worship. Some may do that. Some may pray, some may not pray. And those are things to keep in mind. So yeah, my partners, we honor each other's spiritual religious boundaries. We honor each other's right to have freedom of religion and freedom from religion too. So what boundaries do you need? One way to identify your boundaries is to think about the areas of your life when you're experiencing problems. Do you constantly feel exhausted? Do you feel uncomfortable around your coworkers, for example? Do you feel resentful of your mother's intrusions or father's intrusions? Each of these problems is telling that you're lacking boundaries in this area of your life. I've identified seven common types of boundaries, which we already went over. Understanding each type can help you clarify the specific boundaries that you may need. Seven types of boundaries you may need by Sharon Martin, LCSW, on April 23rd, 2020. We all need boundaries. Boundaries keep us safe. Boundaries differentiate me from you. Boundaries help us focus on what's most important to us. And boundaries improve relationships by creating clear expectations and responsibilities. But it can be hard to figure out what boundaries you need to set. So, I want to make it clear all of my partners and I, we have sexual intimacy. As the most recognized, well, this type of intimacy is mostly self-explanatory. That said, it's more than just having sex. Sexual intimacy is also about sharing fantasies, desires, and needs. Ultimately creates a safe space to open up to each other about what you like or don't like without fear of being judged or shut out. Once you're able to comfortably communicate your sexual needs with each other, you've reached the highest level of sexual intimacy. This includes creating and respecting healthy boundaries. Not only does this improve physical intimacy, but improves trust and communication as well. My partners and I, we honor each other, you know, my partners and I, we have emotional intimacy. Emotional intimacy is one of the most important types to share with your partner. It means you're able to express your feelings and emotional needs in a relationship, which requires some vulnerability. Being able to share different emotions with your partner is what helps create trust, which builds a strong foundation for a healthy relationship. You can talk to each other about anything, no matter how difficult the conversation might be. To back the importance of emotional intimacy, we look at Dr. John Gottman's sound house theory. It identifies the essential parts of any successful feeling relationship. The sound house theory holds that the foundation of all romantic relationships, I'll put in all non-romantic relationships too, is understanding each other's psychological worlds, including history, hopes, worries, and joy. By truly trying to understand each other's worlds, or truly trying to understand each other's worlds, you know, understanding each other, you need to embrace honesty and vulnerability, which leads to emotional closeness. From there, you learn to lean on one another, embrace positive perspectives, manage conflict, achieve your dreams, and create shared need. My partners and I, we honor each other's intellect. You know, my partners and I, we have intellectual intimacy. The overall benefit of intellectual intimacy is being able to share thoughts and opinions that are respected by your partners or partner. It can be as simple as discussing a book or having more controversial conversations about politics or religion. No matter the discussion, you remain open-minded when you have different views or opinions. Much like emotional intimacy, intellectual intimacy requires vulnerability. It allows for a safe space to talk about tough topics without being put down or ridiculed. My partners and I, we have aesthetic intimacy. Simply put, aesthetic intimacy means being able to share an experience, a beauty together. The experience depends on your interests as a couple or non-couple. Maybe both or all parties involved experience the beauty of a sunset or would rather go see a play from your local theater group. One of the most important parts of aesthetic intimacy is learning to appreciate each other's interests. If you're into different things, take turns experiencing each of them together. It can significantly strengthen your bond and help you appreciate and celebrate your differences. My partners and I have creative intimacy. Creative intimacy involves planning and creating things together. While taking art class together, it might pop in your mind and involves so much more. Fostering your creative intimacy can also include designing your romantic future or non-romantic future together. You also want to create the best versions of yourself. So think of ways to help each other grow. Make future plans, create a bucket list, or set goals that you can reach together. My partners and I, we have recreational intimacy. Yep, you guessed it. Recreational intimacy means finding hobbies and interests you can experience together. Common interests keep you feeling connected, especially when the monotony of everyday life kicks in. The goal of recreational intimacy is to keep the romantic spark or non-romantic spark alive in your relationships, casual or committed, monogamous or non-monogamous. Have fun together. While it's still important to have separate interests as well, you should still be making effort to do things together to help keep you all feeling connected. My partners and I, we have work intimacy. Work intimacy isn't about your careers. It's about each of you putting in the work needed to keep your relationship flowing smoothly. Examples include, you know, making plans or any other responsibilities that contribute to your life together. It could be chores around the house, taking care of kids. It could be, hey, let's network together, let's do entrepreneurship together, or let's collaborate on projects together, let's build each other's business acumen, those types of things. And these things can happen committed, casual, non-monogamous, and monogamous as well. When one of you feels like you're doing more than the other, it can cause other areas of intimacy to suffer, especially sexual intimacy. You should both or all parties involved be equally contributing to your life as a couple to ensure, or a non-couple to ensure each of you feels respected and appreciated. My partners and I, we have crisis intimacy. When you go through a crisis together, whether big or small, it should leave you feeling closer as a couple or non-couple. Crisis intimacy means you empathize and support each other during tough times. Most importantly, you want to be there for your partner. If you share a high level of crisis intimacy, you're likely to feel more connected and in compassionate love or romantic love, whether y'all are an item or not, after experiencing a difficult situation together. You're also willing to be patient, supportive during the healing process that follows. My partners and I, we have conflict intimacy. Now, with myself and my partners, we're not the argument type. Yes, conflict is inevitable. It is critical to be able to work through them and learn from them. Our conflict intimacy refers to our exceptional ability to effectively handle misunderstandings and allow them to make us stronger as a team that we are. When I say team, for me, that means my solo polyamorous living. Conflict management is one of the key factors in successful relationships of any kind. If you're constantly arguing without being able to reach a resolution, your relationship starts to crumble. Conflict intimacy allows you to make mistakes but remain committed as a couple or non-couple. Each of you works to improve your individual behavior in ways that positively impact your relationship. How you handle conflict. Number 11. My partners and I have communication intimacy. As you may have noticed with other types of intimacy, good communication plays a huge role. Communication intimacy means you're able to talk openly and honestly about your needs in the relationship without your partner feeling threatened or criticized. Or partners do, This type of intimacy allows for healthy dialogue about your expectations, followed by compassionately loving, open-minded feedback from your partner and their partners. You need to be able to tell each other what you need most. If your partner or partner seems to have trouble opening up, start by opening up more yourself. As you communicate more frequently, you'll build more trust and connection, which can help your partner or partners do the same. Most importantly, harnessing active listening skills can significantly improve communication. The best way to do it, put the phone down. Put the phone away. A Pew Research Center survey found that around 51% of people in committed relationships say that partners often are sometimes distracted by the cell phone while they're trying to have a conversation with them. That happens in non-committed relationships too, by the way. Additionally, 4 in 10 people said they're sometimes bothered by the amount of time their partner or partner spends on their mobile device. Fubbing, phone slash nubbing their partner. Their partner is a total communication killer. The next time you and your partners have a discussion, no matter how small, try to focus on their words instead of a digital screen. And my partners and I, we have spiritual intimacy. Spiritual intimacy does not necessarily have to center around religion. Simply put, it means being able to discuss the deeper meanings of life. It can certainly involve religion for some, but not all. But above all else, you're able to talk about your spiritual beliefs without being judged. Spiritual intimacy does not mean your opinions and beliefs have to match. It means you're willing to respect and appreciate them no matter what. As long as y'all have chemistry and compatibility, you don't have to agree on everything, just most things. While you don't necessarily have experience, I think, while you don't necessarily have to experience all 12 types of intimacy, it's important to understand that they're all intertwined to create a strong, healthy relationships or relationships. For example, it's hard to have sexual intimacy without feeling connected on other non-sexual levels. I agree. The Facilitates intimacy, connect as a roadmap to finding overall happiness, satisfaction, and connecting to your relationship. If you found your person and or persons, you'll want to explore each type. Your bond is a culmination of many different types of intimacy, not just sexual and emotional. Expanding intimacy allows you to wholeheartedly give yourself to another person or persons and facilitates mutual respect, compassionate love, and understanding or understanding. If your relationship is in it for the long run, casual or committed, making an effort to connect on these 12 different levels will ensure it's long-lasting and full of compassionate love. Or, hey, relationships can be short-term, medium-term, but always respect each other. My partners now, we have commitment intimacy. For us, that means I see you well and treat you well all the time, everywhere. And you can do that as a solo polyamorous person that I am. Commitment intimacy is not just about committing to your relationship, whether casual, committed, or casual could be, I don't ever treat you as a disposable trash in a dumpster that is incapable of being of human thoughts and human feelings, right? But it's also about devoting yourself to working toward a shared goal, whether it's starting a family for some people, but not all, buying a new home for some people, but not all, starting your own business for some people, but not all. You both are all parties involved are ready and willing to put in the effort it takes to achieve. So, and that's so important. Absolutely. And I also want to say this for myself. I'm going to be saying the word infrequently a lot starting right now. So infrequently means little, rarely, seldom, not often, not occurring regularly, occasional. Barely occurring. Hardly happening. Not constant. Not habitual. Not happening or occurring at long intervals. So that's what it frequently means. Here I go. I decided to have sex with webcam models, pornographic models infrequently. I decided to have sex with strippers infrequently, naked butlers infrequently, pole dancers infrequently, phone sex operators have sexually oriented conversation clients who may do verbal sexual roleplay infrequently. Go-go dances infrequently, erotic dances infrequently, exotic dances infrequently, neo-burlesquers, American burlesquers, Victoria burlesquers frequently, twerkers infrequently, all the neo-burlesquers, American burlesquers, and Victoria burlesquers infrequently, the erotic and exotic dancers both infrequently. Okay, the twerkers infrequently, striptease slash table dances infrequently, erotic massages infrequently, grind, you know, those who bumping and grinding infrequently. Lap dancing infrequently. Pornographic film acting infrequently. Peep show performance infrequently. Escort services slash girlfriend experience slash boyfriend experience slash sugar baby, sugaring and sugar dating and all infrequently. Sex street prostitution infrequently, sexual surrogates who work with psychoanalysts to engage in sexual activities, part of therapy with their clients infrequently. Indoor prostitution, brothel work, massage parlor, prostitution bar, casino prostitution frequently, the dominatrix infrequently, call boys and call girls infrequently. I say infrequently because having sex with sex workers a lot means you have to pay them a lot, because sex work can be expensive. So if I do it frequently, that means for me, I save more than I spend in terms of money. And plus, I decided to, one of the benefits of having sex worker friends is there's discounts, or sometimes they let you sleep with them for free. And all the sex I would have would all be legal. And would all be enthusiastically consenting, and everyone seemed respectfully, treated respectfully, so it wouldn't cost me my self-respect at all, and it wouldn't cause the right people to lose respect for me either. So that's why I decided to do pornographic film acting infrequently, also because I tend to have this belief that I never shared before, but I'm sharing it now. I don't want people to see me having sex on camera all the time, because I want more off-camera sex than on-camera sex, because that helps me to have an easier time ignoring the critics, the detractors, and the naysayers. I don't do anything I do for them. I'm just saying that's part of it, but mostly it's because on camera sex is more free flowing and more freestyling, while on camera sex, it's more performative, theatrical. You know, you gotta be there as long as they want you there, which could be all day. I don't mind having sex all day, but when pornographic film acting, constant posing, constant stopping, constant camera cut, constant camera rolling, constant angles, you're more concerned with maintaining erections, you're more concerned about sexual dysfunction, so I can handle all that infrequently. I could not handle that frequently. So, I just want to make that clear that I do have all the 12 types of intimacies with my sex worker sex partners and my non-sex worker sex partners too. And all the 6 to 7 boundaries, I have them all honored with my non-sex worker sex partners and my sex worker sex partners too. And for all the 7 types of sex I avoid that I did earlier, when it comes to my sex worker sex partners and my non-sex worker sex partners, we never have sex when we're necessarily hurting. We never body shame each other. We're never physically unsafe. We're never emotionally unsafe. We're never having sex, you know, counting down the minutes till it ends. We're never having sex where we don't even come close to coming. And we don't have sex where we're not truly fully in the mood. So those are things I really, really wanted to share. And of course, we do honor sex workers' rights. Unconditionally, permanently. And here's an I'll say this and then I'll read to you my thoughts from my own book. So let's get to it. Okay. I want to say that also for me, I really, I want to say that we honor each other's sexual and reproductive health. We honor each other's sexual and reproductive health and rights, and we honor each other's, declaration of sexual rights, declaration of sexual pleasure as well. Here's the grand finale, then I'll conclude this magnificent ever. So. Page 483 of my Amazon book, Autism is My Super Blessing, Volume 1, My Neurodiversity, Fruit of Merit. It says, I say, based upon my years of doing serious work in therapy, I know that I am pansexual, my true sexual orientation. My pansexuality means that I am all around attracted to adults of any gender identity, any sexual orientation, any sex characteristic. Inner beauty is more important to me than outer beauty. I am these genuine ways, even if the traumas never happened in my life. I am hearts over parts. I am more focused on personality than physicality. I prefer voluptuous curvaceousness in women, buff beefiness in men, and a mixture of curvaceousness and beefiness in all the other types of adults. I prefer dark black skin black adults. My serious work in therapy has revealed that I am a pangender, my true gender identity. My pangenderism means that I go by all gender pronouns. I share commonalities with all genders that explains how I experience all genders. I am liberated in my assigned male at birth body. My true sex characteristics are that I have a penis with testicles. I do not want to get any surgeries. You can call me Antonio, my male name, Anthony, my female name, and Anton, my non-binary name. I am genuinely these ways, even if the traumas never happened in my life. Let me explain my pangenderism. It is a form of my being multigendered. Call me any gender pronouns that you can easily remember as well as be comfortable with. Call me either one of the three names I mentioned earlier that you could easily remember as well as be comfortable with. Make it easy on yourself and you do not confuse yourself. Show me the same respect I would show you. Once I move out, I will start placing them/they/their gender pronouns on documentation. I am disinterested in hijacking girls' and women's experiences. I am disinterested in purloining girls' and women's narratives. I am disinterested in comparing my life to girls' and women's lives. And I am disinterested in making girls and women all about me. I am genuinely these ways, even if the traumas never happened in my life. Let me elucidate on my pansexuality. As a pansexual person, I am sexually, emotionally, physically, romantically, intellectually, socially, spiritually, interpersonally, professionally, personally, and psychologically attracted to women, men, cisgender persons, non-binary persons, transgendered persons, queer persons, questioning persons, curious persons, gender non-conforming persons, asexual persons, gay persons, lesbian persons, bisexual persons, androgynous persons, metrosexual persons, two-spirit persons, heterosexual persons, sexually fluid persons, gender fluid persons, intersex persons. I'm equally attracted to all those people. I'm drawn to people regardless of their sexuality, their gender, their birthday suits, in quotations, the appearance of the genitalia, and their personality attributes. I develop bonds with persons of any gender, non-gendered persons, and identifying with any sex. I am not attracted to every person I meet. I do not have sex with every person I meet. I am not attracted to inanimate objects. I am no longer sexually confused like I was taught to be by the crooks. I am no longer sexually frustrated like I was taught to be by the crooks. I am not sexually ravenous like I was taught to be by the crooks. I am not attracted to non-humans, and I am not attracted to non-adults. I label myself queer because I am not exclusively heterosexual. I label myself non-binary because I am not exclusively cisgender. I confirm that I am a member of the LGBTQI+ community. I am officially a member of LGBTQI+ culture. I do not gauge my interest levels in a person based on whether they have quote unquote valid looks or whether they have quote unquote genitals that are socially acceptable. In quotations, human chromosomes and human genitals do not hold much importance in my attraction levels to them. I do not obsess over the flesh even though I recognize it. I have wise, lofty standards in people. I am more intrigued by how a person carries themselves. I am primarily attracted to a person's inner character and personality. I believe everyone should be free to love as their heart see fit. I tend to be non-judgmental, open-minded, and adventurous by nature. I disregard cutthroat restrictions and inequitable rules that inhibit me from living my free-spirited, free-living, free-thinking, free-love lifestyle. And love style, I want to add in there. I am genuinely these ways, even if the traumas never happened in my life. My permanent singleness by my choices, my true marital status, my permanent childlessness by my choices, my true parental status, my permanent petlessness by my choices, my true status concerning my pet dynamics, and my permanent living alone all by myself is my true living scenario. I live life on my own terms and by my own schedule. I'm attracted to my own liberalism, progressivism, nonconformity, unconventionality, autonomy, individuality, secularity, modernism, non-religiosity, non-traditionalism. I'm generally these ways, even if the traumas never happened in my life. My reasons for being all these ways are that the regular world of work and most of all my being a global icon prevents me from being a family person due to the reality of spending more time with my colleagues, which also means spending more time away from the immediate family that I would devise. That would cause me stress. I'm an exceedingly close-knit person who likes to have plenty of energy for those close to me. I'm generally these ways, and the traumas never happened in my life. I do not make decisions out of traumatization, but out of my being triumphant. I'm going to stop right there, and I'm going to excitedly conclude this episode. Anything more I got to say, I'm going to wrap it up in my next episode where I get it all out.